Of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for this week. Got another interesting filmmaker on with us, which I'm going to throw over to John this episode again, like we did with Floyd's last week. So we've got Hunter back, about time.
Yo.
Throng of ladies have been asking, where's Hunter?
Oh, no. I know.
Yeah.
It's hard
actually, and there was one person who said, who actually contacted me about that, who actually thought you were leaving. And he sent me an email, and the only words he said were, where are you going, Hunter?
Oh, God.
That's an in-joke. It's a very, very in-joke that I had to bring up. But,
well, he's the lone bachelor, so he's gonna get that thing to eat on this show.
Yeah, true.
That, you know, that term, you had to be there? You really had to be there for that. Let's just say that. All right. So, going to pass it over to John again, and we're going to rock with it.
Okay. Last year, I started reading up on obscure, like, unsolved 70s crimes, and one that really stood out was a character who was never caught, who started out as the East Area Rapist in Sacramento in the mid-1970s, and later became the original Night Stalker in Southern California, and murdered people. He committed 50 rapes in the Sacramento area, I believe, and something like 10 murders in Southern California, and police did not link him as the same criminal until 98-99. I also found out that a filmmaker was trying to finance or put together a low-budget horror slash kind of teen dramedy of sorts. He'll explain it for us. And he hasn't secured the financing yet to film it, but it sounds very interesting. It's about the final victim who was she was murdered, I believe, was it like 5 years after his previous crime? Like, he'd been dormant for a few years, killed her, and hasn't struck again that we know of. So tonight, our guest is Cameron Cloutier.
Hello.
And do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners and kind of explain the setup for this?
Sure. I surprise, surprise. The film has not achieved financing yet. I'm sure that's something right. That you hear all the time. So I've been on this film, I would say, since probably late 2009, early 2010. So it's been a while. Yeah. So this basically what it is it's like you had mentioned, he attacked and raped almost 50 people up in the Sacramento area of California. And then he moved his way down south, 6 hours down south to Los Angeles area, Goleta area, Santa Barbara area, and then another hour south towards Irvine, Santa Ana, that area. His crime spree went 10 years that we know of, so 76 to 86. There are some people who believe that he committed a series of break-ins in a town called Visalia, but that has never been officially confirmed as being him, so it's kind of hard to kind of put that into his official
right.
crimes.
He was called the Visalia Ransacker, right? And like starting in 1973, supposedly hundreds of burglaries, break-ins, and odd behavior.
correct. If it is indeed the same person, you know, we don't know. But he went from 76 to 81 with all these rapes and murders, and then stopped. And then 5 years later, he came out of hiding for one girl on the late evening of May 4th, early May 5th, 1986, and then has never been heard from again. So the film that that I've come up with is a film about the last girl, and her name was Janelle Lisa Cruz, and she was 18 years old. She lived in Irvine, California. And then there was a whole series of events that happened in her life from 2 years before her death till her death that perhaps points to various suspects, various people that have been in her life that you know, have not been looked at. So the film concentrates on her, but it flashes back to a lot of the other crimes. So we get to see, you know, a lot of the similarities, because this guy, like, even though he attacked so many people, I would say almost 90% of the crimes were exactly the same. Same script, same action, same results. I basically take, I don't know, like a handful of the past crimes, show you kind of his MO, what he did, and then I'm telling you Janelle's story, and the two go back and forth. So it's interesting, because the way I looked at it is just in terms of cinematic, if I can even use such a word like that, is between 76 and 86, there were two type of films that exploded during that 10-year period as well, which was the horror slasher film and the teen coming of age story. And so by using one style to tell the crimes and one story to tell Janelle's story, you're going to get two different styles of filmmaking colliding into each other. So it'd be like Friday the 13th meets Pretty in Pink, basically. But to tell a real life true story, and it's not just, you know, oh, Cameron just went on Google and Wikipedia and did all this stuff. I mean, I know Janelle's family. I've seen all the pictures. I've, you know, read all the poems. I've read all the stuff. You know, I have, you know, home videos of her. So, I mean, I've spent, you know, several years researching this thing. And then it got to the point where I wrote the script. Everyone who read it loved it. I've had people come on the project and leave the project as producers, because they get on and they go, oh yeah, this will be like a real fun little thing to work on. And then they realize, holy crap, this is like a substantial piece of work that I'm actually going to have to do something. Right. This isn't, you know, and so people either leave or they come on and try to take over the project. So I end up having to like kick them off. It's ridiculous, because there's so many terrible films that are always being made, and somehow those people are managed to come together and make this terrible film. So, you know, I find it so hard to believe that something so huge like this, that has never been documented, you know, in a published book, a film, you know, that has never been discussed. Most people have never even heard of these crimes. And I've done two different crowdsourcing campaigns, neither of which even, you know, brought in anything remotely of what I need to make the film. So it's really interesting, because those links, you know, even this actress from Alice in Wonderland, the Tim Burton film, Mia Wasikowska, she started tweeting about the film, nobody cares. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah. The perks are like, you know, dinner with the original Night Stalker.
if we could only catch him that easy, and if he's as dumb as okay.
Well, that leads me into the question I had for Cameron, which was, obviously, you wanting to get this film made, you got a story to tell, but you also want to try and highlight to get this guy caught, correct?
Of course, because I think that if the film's done right, in my opinion, then I can totally see investigators being on the Today Show with Matt Lauer going, now why hasn't this guy been caught?
Okay, which leads me into the question I had when I first heard about this was, why a film about the last victim? Why not a documentary? Because what we've been trying to research, what little's out there, and with so much access you've got to the FBI files and like, if that's what it is, why not a narrative or a documentary out there to really highlight it and also lay emphasis onto the last victim if you want to? I just want to know why go for a Hollywood feature.
Well, that's a great question. The reason why, and believe me, my life would be so much easier if I could do this. My initial thought was to do that as a documentary. Mm. But the problem is that, one, there are a few like TV specials that have been made about this case. And what law enforcement says in those documentaries, you know, those like 44-minute documentaries that touch on a lot of stuff, but not everything. That's what they can say on the record. So my film wouldn't be able to have anything else come out from their point of view. Also, because these cases were in the late 70s, early 80s, most of them, there's not any real footage, you know. I mean, all the footage I have of Janelle is maybe, you know, 5-6 minutes tops. So, you know, it'd be a lot of talking heads, a lot of still photos that everybody has seen, because there's just, you know, they won't, because it's still an ongoing case. Yeah. They can't release anything. You know, I've seen, there's a really great documentary that I think you can only see it like on one of those Walmart 6-disc, you know, things about serial killers. But there's a great documentary called The 6 Degrees of Helter Skelter. And it's the most amazing documentary, because they get everything you could ever want, but the reason why they can get everything is because it's a closed case. But you know, something like this is, you know, the family can't even access the autopsies.
Isn't there a statute of limitations on a cold case like this? I mean, we're talking what, nearly 30 years since the last murder, known murder anyway.
Yeah, but it's still very open. And I mean, there's a little TV special that was made for German television, and as well as I think an MSNBC did a little story about it, and they actually flashed some of the crime scene photos in their documentary.
Yeah, I saw
And so that is never allowed again. People have no idea. The families have no idea how those pictures got out, you know, and they called and complained about it, and it became a big thing.
I think, though, making a feature film about it's actually the better move, because when you make a feature film based on a true story, you know, people will go and research it. They'll go and look it up. They're kind of a little more interested. Well, how much of this was true? You know, like they see the movie and they like it, it kind of gets their blood going. Whereas another documentary, you know, like he said, we don't really know all that much.
Oh, sure. I'm not doubting Cameron's choice.
No. I'm not saying you were. I'm just saying that, you know, I can see why. And plus, like, when he said a coming-of-age movie meets a slasher movie, I was watching one of the little TV documentaries on this that Stu sent me, and they were talking about, like, you know, somebody didn't report seeing him outside of someone's house across the street. It made me think of Halloween. You know, when the little kid looks out. And I was just thinking, like, coming-of-age movie meets a slasher. I was like, oh, that, you know, like, that sounds – based on this, that sounds good, you know.
If you have a dramatic film, it can be a good Trojan horse, you know.
For the
Google generation, people get sparked up. They'll go look this stuff up, and who knows.
Well, and the other thing is this. There's two things with that. One is, it's very sad to say, but the people who really need to see this film wouldn't watch a documentary. You know, the documentary would be made for people who are already interested in the case, not just random people.
It would be made for people.
Yes,
Netflix is what it would be made for.
Mm. Right. But like a film about, you know, a 16 to 18 year old girl and her story, and then all the other victims, and a lot of them were not necessarily all housewives. Some of them were, you know, in teenagers as well. The kind of the moral of the film is you don't have to, because especially like what happened with Janelle and stuff, it's like you don't have to sit there and let this happen to you. You can fight back. And that's really hard of a message to convey in a documentary with talking heads.
Yeah. Have you thought about getting this script to Chloe Grace Moretz? She seems to do everything these days.
Any young role requiring any sort of sexual or language or violence, she'll do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it may have been cute in Kick-Ass 1, but it's not cute in Kick-Ass 2. So
I didn't see Kick-Ass 2 I heard stuff about it, and I was like, not interested.
No, although Carrie was a fantastic remake, I will give that much.
I didn't see it.
Man, watch it. The first 3 minutes, I'm like, oh no, here we go. But after that, man, it went right off. It was awesome.
The director of that film said that she didn't want to make a horror film. She wanted to make a super villain origin story. like she's trying to equate it to like comic books, and I'm like, no, that's not what people go to see Carrie for.
Yeah,
this isn't
that's
Chronicle
how we market stuff.
Oh yeah, Chronicle. There you go.
Yeah, but I mean, I suppose you could really get away with I don't think I'm actually saying, well, you're making the wrong choice. I'm just quizzing why. I suppose you could
you
put a 40.
A good interviewer. He's being hard hitting.
Yeah,
I've asked myself that question all the time. Like, it would be so much easier. But the problem is if these crimes happen today, first of all, if they happen today, I don't think we'd have the same results of the crime sleuthing going on. But I also think that there'd be everything. We'd have videos. We'd have pictures because we live in the Facebook age, you know. But back then, in 1976, I mean, people were still, you know, sitting on rolls of film that had never been developed. So
yeah. I did like seeing some of the interviews. Like, in this little thing Stu sent me, I like seeing some of the interviews from the 70s with, like, you know, reporter on the street with the microphone talking to the kids with
that's
the long
great.
Hair and bell bottoms. So I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's a totally different world.
You want to try and get this out, Cameron, before Rob Zombie gets onto it.
Oh, yeah. Rob Zombie's going to hear about this because he's, believe me, he listens.
He listens to this show regularly.
Rob Zombie is a Manson fanatic. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The hell you say, really?
We went over that on a show about the Lords of Salem. And
well, I was going to mention that.
Rehashing Manson.
I was going to mention Halloween 2. I mean, here's this poor girl, Lori, that survived this horrible thing in part one, and she's got a Manson poster above her bed in part two, and I'm thinking, you know, somebody should have told Rob, the set decorator should have been like, you know, she wouldn't have had that poster.
She likes the things Rob Zombie likes. Also, he turned Loomis into Vincent Bugliosi, so there you go, you know, writing books about it.
Yeah, okay then. So, but what I was getting at was... You could actually put like a 45-minute documentary onto a Blu-ray in the future if the film gets made. And I really hope it does. You know, I honestly hope it does because I think this needs to be highlighted. And while I'm in another country, and you know, the amount of knowledge I had about this guy was jack and shit until about a week ago. It really is fascinating, and the fact that it's most likely out there. But what strikes me is obviously, they thought, okay, the last known murder or attack was 86. He's either dead or he's in prison.
Yeah, I was wondering about like what the theories are as to why he stopped.
Yeah.
You know.
There are – well, it could be anything. I have my own theories, but that's – I mean, you know, that's just me. and those theories are not necessarily reflected in the film because that's not, you know, proven fact. So
– okay.
But, you know, I mean, I personally think that I think there was something about Janelle that caused some sort of closure for him.
In what way?
I don't know. I mean, I think that – I mean, because some people say, well, let's say he was on a military tour or was in prison before Janelle, and that's why he didn't kill anyone for 5 years. Okay, fine. Let's say that's true. But then why kill her and then stop? You know, why not just continue his rampage? Why just her and then stop? It, you know – I feel like either she knew him.
Yeah.
She didn't necessarily know that he was doing this, but I think that there probably was something where she got too close. And I feel like Janelle, more than the, you know, if you look at all the other ones, and then you look at Janelle's case and what happened to her and the stuff that was leading up to her murder, she feels more like a, somebody who had to be silenced more than somebody who was just part of the random attack. Everybody else got hit in the back of the head. She's the only one to get hit in the face.
Well, that's what struck me as strange when I saw the stuff Stu sent me, was that her face was like bludgeoned like apart. Like it was just, it just seemed like a little more sadistic and crazy.
It stinks of actually like the Jack the Ripper's last victim. Where
yes.
He just went berserk with Mary Kelly, and that was it. Yeah. There was nothing else ever heard again of Jack the Ripper.
Exactly. That it completely reminds me of that. And considering what was done to Janelle, that is a very apt reference, because everybody else was left where they could be identified. She could not be identified.
Okay. So anyway, the documentary that Hunter's talking about, the link that I seen, was an E! True Hollywood Story one, which might sound like, you know, E! Channel, but it was actually very well done. I kind of wish it was longer, because E! Do sometimes documentaries that run 45, sometimes they run them at 90 minutes. I've got some of both.
And that particular special completely cuts out the Goleta crimes.
Yeah.
I read about that. Yeah, they had to cut a whole section out for time restraints.
And I talked to the producer of that show, and he said that it wasn't that they neglected to do it. They just, you know, they have 42 minutes.
So
something had to go.
But my point was that, to me, when I watched this, it seemed like two completely different people. Because there was one MO that he had through the 70s, and then a completely different one when he started killing couples.
Yes.
So what makes you think that they actually link together, that they are the same person?
Well, I mean, before he started killing the couples, he was attacking and raping the couples in the same way. It's just what happened was a few of the couples started getting away from him, and so then he ended up starting to kill them. And then they've been doing, you know, since the first rapes, they were taking, you know, DNA samples and stuff all the way through all the murders, but they didn't have the computers that we would have in the 90s and stuff that they could run it all through, and they start getting all these matches. So they knew it was the same person, but they didn't know until the late 90s that it was all connected. So until then, every single one of the murders was thought to be an isolated, separate murder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that really can stifle an investigation.
What struck me as well was the actual sort of parallels between East Area Rapist, original Night Stalker, who we're going to call Eerons throughout the show. And actually the title of this episode will be called Eerons. But now the parallels between Zodiac was that he did his in two lots. He did the late 60s, and then he did the mid-70s as well. But he's actually finished around the 70s, but he kept corresponding with the San Francisco Chronicle up until 78, I think was the last one there. Did Eerons actually do any sort of correspondence with any sort of newspapers or police or anything like that?
I believe he left one or maybe two different poems, but I don't know if he left them for the police or just happened to leave them, you know, because they weren't addressed to anybody. So
okay. What was the genesis of that phone call as well that you heard at the start of this episode?
You're talking about the phone message?
Kill you. Yeah, I'm going to kill you one, yeah.
Yeah, that's from 1978, I believe, an answering machine.
And they can prove that it's Eerons.
Yes, because he had taken he took driver's licenses and things that he would be able to call you back, because he would call the victims back repeatedly.
Oh.
But it obviously would never stay on long enough to be traced, so...
Okay, then. Has they ever dabbled the idea there might be two different people, two different rapists?
Well, like I said, they linked them all by DNA. The ones that didn't come up are considered other people. Because they thought that he was responsible for even more crimes, but those got taken off because they ended up not being him.
Okay, then.
Yeah, there were other rapists in Sacramento at the time in the mid-70s. Like, there was the early morning rapist, and there were several other characters. Sacramento was a scary place in the 70s.
It still is.
Is. Like, they had the thrill killers, I think, in the early 80s. And I think
did anybody look and see if these coincide when Arnold moved there?
No. Well, he didn't move there till what? When was he governor? 2004 or something like that.
Well, but he lived in California for a while, bodybuilding.
Well, he was in Santa Monica.
Oh, okay.
And he couldn't scale a fence the way this guy.
When you said early morning rapist, I was like, that sounds like something Arnold would do, you know?
Oh, well, no, he's more like the very open harasser on the movie set.
It's interesting that you bring up Zodiac, right? Because Fincher made that film,
yeah.
Zodiac. And what's interesting is that I've been asked before, since I've been doing this for a while, you know, how come your film's not like Zodiac? And I said, well, we've already seen Zodiac. And you could do the same movie with this, with Zodiac, but how stupid would that be? A series of unsolved crimes that just go on for decades and no one solves them, the movie ends. That would be drive everyone nuts. And that's
Plus,
not
you
very
don't sad. Have, like, an autistic person to follow, like the Jake Gyllenhaal character, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and that's actually ironic that you bring it up, because I was talking to someone the other day who said that Zodiac was just a kind of, you know, kind of their film for him. And I asked them why. And he said, because it has no resolution. I said, but that's the whole mystery of the thing is you don't know who it is. He's still out there, possibly still out there. I mean, Zodiac would be about, what, I don't know, 60s lot now.
And Zodiac's kind of like, it's kind of a movie about this sort of obsession with a crime, you know, just like having to figure out. Everybody in the movie is very fixated on it, you know.
It's a movie about frustration. It has one element that they illustrate that kind of had me thinking about what people have said about this case with the Eurons is how the different police departments didn't seem to cooperate. Like, they're almost competing with each other and withholding faxes and stuff. And there's been a lot of stuff I've read online. There's a lot of talk that there was sort of a competition or jealousy or whatever you want to call it between different police departments not really cooperating the way they should have. And supposedly there was an incident, I don't know how true this is, that an investigator who was shot by – who was believed to be the Visalia ransacker – he went up to Sacramento during the East Area Rapist Rampage and said, I think it might have been this guy that we dealt with in Visalia. And he was supposedly laughed out of the department. That's just a rumor, you know.
Jeez.
I don't know how true that is. And also that there were detectives trying to link the original Night Stalker with the East Area Rapist, like back when the crimes were occurring in the 80s. But it just wasn't, you know, DNA wasn't what it is now. So they couldn't make that link, like, right away. That's an evolving technology.
Mm. Exactly. You know, if you look into these crimes and all the theories and you know, stories about what people, you know, say happened versus what really happened, this, I could make the movie about the East Area Rapist like Oliver Stone's JFK, you know,
yeah,
with all
very
the different
things.
But again, you know, I'm not going to do that because JFK has already been made. So, I mean, the whole thing is that, you know, you want a story, a film about this to not be a copycat of somebody else's film, because this case, to me, when I first heard about this, a friend came over to the house one night and was talking to my wife and I, and they were talking about true crime cases. And he just said, oh, Cameron, have you ever heard of this guy? And I said, no. And he started telling me these stories about this guy. And I didn't believe him for one second, because it literally felt like Michael Myers. It felt like the boogeyman. Like, there's
well,
no
the part
way.
The part that scares the shit out of me is the flashlight.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, the idea of waking up to a flashlight in your face is terrifying to me.
Right.
Well, not only that, he would kick down doors, like in the early the rape cases in Sacramento. He would kick down doors. He was aggressive.
That's the thing that struck me when I watched this was, you know, I kind of keep putting parallels between him and Zodiac. Zodiac was very calm. I mean, apart from the fact he was a vicious killer, but when he spoke to his victims, he told them he would speak. I remember when he spoke that one at Lake Berryessa, he was speaking to them for about half an hour. Then he stabbed him in the back and killed one of them and damn near paralyzed another. Whereas Eurons was just, you know, aggressive from second one. He just busts down the door and just starts screaming at everybody. So,
didn't at one point he would come in and say, "I'm here for food and money."
Yeah, he had a story that he would tell the victims.
Yeah, and that was the people who were asleep in bed. There were several, like, girls, young girls that were just kind of like sitting up late at night, playing the piano, watching TV, and like you said, he would just come up, kick open the door, or just, you know, just walk into their house and surprise them while they were still awake. So it wasn't everybody was asleep, but the ones that were asleep, again, it's kind of like, I'm going to throw out this weird reference, but let me just walk through it. It reminds me a lot of like 9/11, because the first three planes, if we are to believe what everyone has said, is that they didn't know they were going to crash, so they just sat there and it happened. Whereas the fourth plane, because they took off later, knew that they were crashing the planes and they weren't going to just land, so they got up and did try to do something about it. Whereas like all these people, if they knew that he was going to kill them, I think they would have fought. But they didn't. They thought that he was just going to rob them and leave. And by the time they got tied up, they were dead. You know. So I like to think that if all these couples had known that he was going to try and do this stuff, I would think that they would have fought more than just people just sitting there and letting him just do whatever he want, making Christmas, making turkey, eating full dinners while they were, you know, being killed, you know.
A killer and a thief as well.
Well, then there's this whole thing about in Goleta. I mean, I don't know if this is true or not, but this has been said so many times about how he there are that he possibly brought a white German Shepherd to two of the crimes with three toes. And
this is straight out of a Rob Zombie film, really.
I talked to a police officer. That said that they in Sacramento, and they said that they had roadblocked several of the neighborhoods where he couldn't get in, couldn't get out, but he was running across the rooftops.
They should have looked for him at Captain Clegg performances concerts.
And so you hear all these stories, right? And you go, okay, maybe this guy did this, but not, you know, everything else is like, you know, what do you call those things? You know, where old wives' tales are, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And but they're all true. And that's the scary thing is how this one guy do all of these things?
Well, okay, there's two incidents I've read about where he was chased on – he was on a bicycle and he outran the cops in Sacramento. Yeah. There's also an incident where I think it was in one of the Bay Area towns where he had a failed attack where an FBI agent chased him and shot him and really believes the bullet hit him. And he still got away.
Hey, Hannah. You know the last words were heard when this guy was riding away? I'm a loner, daddy. A rebel. Oh, gosh. Oh, hell, he was good at doing that stuff.
He would steal bikes. That's the thing is, he would get away. He would jump. He would steal a bike. And he would flee on a bike. And he obviously had a getaway car somewhere. But
sometimes he had his
escapes very routed out.
Well, sometimes he would steal a bike.
Use the creeks as like a kind of a artery for travel?
Yeah.
Yeah. But sometimes he would steal a bike. I don't know how familiar you are with California, but he would steal a bike from Redding, which was like 3 hours north of Sacramento. So he would steal a bike from like a policeman's daughter, and then bring the bike down to Sacramento. So like, what the hell is he doing in Redding? You know. So he's in all these like towns. Like people like to look at the towns and the areas about where he attacked. My feeling is, let's look at all the towns in California where he didn't attack and ask why these towns and not these towns. Because I know several areas that match the areas that he would attack. Why didn't he come and attack in these areas? You know what I mean? So it's really interesting to figure out. Like, some people don't even think that he moved down south. I mean, some people think that he just stayed in Sacramento and commuted down south to commit the crimes and just come back. I mean, because the crimes were so spaced out.
Right.
I mean, we're talking. Once the murders happened, I believe they were between 5 and 7 months apart. I mean, but it was like pretty. Yeah, it's really interesting if you look at the dates of all the crimes. I mean, so many of the ones in Sacramento were like Thursdays to Monday. So okay, so was he in the military? Did he have leave? Was he a college student? You know, he obviously needed to be able to come and go at all hours of the night and have nobody question him.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, the things the criminally insane will go through to come.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they said he may have been doing stalking for months before he attacked. And
well, I read about a story.
He wore disguise. Get a load of this. There was a street festival. I read this. I don't know how true this is. There was a street festival, and they noticed one of the attendants was in a disguise, like dressed up like an old man. And they think it might have been him, and he was kind of run off because he was spotted, but. It's like it's insane, and there was reports of people saying like weird characters in disguises showing up in the area, you know, in stores and such.
Not only that, but then he would case whole neighborhoods. So if one house was like busy or couldn't get in or didn't want to get in that night, he would just go down three houses and hit the next house. So he knew like everybody's schedules. He knew phone numbers, like so he would like follow people to like where they were having dinner with like their friends and like call them up there and see if they were still there because he'd be in their house waiting for them. And sometimes he would go into the house and like put the ropes and stuff all through the house ready so that when he came in he didn't have to deal with all that stuff. He had everything planted. So one time a couple came home and lifted open the couch cushions and found all the ropes waiting, so they called the cops. And then the cops came, they moved the family out, and then the cops did – do you remember that movie Nighthawks with Sylvester Stallone?
Sure.
Yeah.
With the dressed copper up as a female?
Yeah. And of course, he never attacked the house because he probably saw that they moved out, you know, so.
He probably watched Nighthawks as well.
Nighthawks. That's a funny thing.
Oh, was it really?
No. Nighthawks, wasn't that 76?
81.
No, it was 1981.
81.
Okay. Yeah. Then, it was after. Yeah.
Wow. It's odd. Have the police, how far has this reached? Did it actually reach FBI status, you said?
Yes, now. But what's weird is that if the FBI gets some serious information, this is the unfortunate part right now, is that it's then being rerouted back to either Sacramento or Irvine, you know, depending on where the case is, and letting them handle it, letting a lot of the retired detectives handle it, because honestly, they have crimes today they're trying to solve. They don't really give a shit about this.
Yeah, I understand that, but I mean, this would be sort of a significant, case to solve if they could solve it after so many decades, really.
Well, what's really sad is that, there was a recent article in the last, I don't know, year or two that came out about these cases. And if you read the comment section on the Facebook page of when that story was posted, so many people were either making jokes or just saying things like, dude, it's been 30 years, just let it go. And it's like,
really?
That's easy and said and done for the people who are dead, but there's over 50 people who were attacked and raped by this guy who are still alive. And the sad thing is that a lot of them still live in the areas where they were attacked and raped. Like, there's something that won't let them leave yet until this is closed.
Okay, now have you got a forum or a message board somewhere that you've got running, up and running?
I don't, but I do. I do have a Facebook page for the movie, which is on Facebook page. It's just called Bird with a Broken Wing.
Yeah.
And the reason why it's called that is because that's the name of a poem that Janelle wrote when she was actually in a mental institution.
All right. Okay, because I asked this because...
Were you saying all right because she was in a mental institution?
No, it's just...
All right!
Yeah, I say all right to everything, so, you know.
I'm just playing.
That's all right. I'd say it for their amusement anyway so they can make fun of me. But has it ever crossed your mind that possibly that one of the people who like your Facebook page is Eron's? Sounds far-fetched, but...
No, it's not, because one of the things that the police told me when I started working on the film was, you know, don't be surprised if you get strange messages or, phone calls or emails, you know, and it's always intrigued me, but it's never happened. And then I talked to the producer, I said, of the E! Channel special.
Right.
He's never been contacted about this. No one.
I'm sure if he's dead.
Yeah. You
know? I mean, nobody who has come out. I'm going to say right now, I have been attacked by some loonies, you know, by some people online. But for the most part, every single person I've talked to that has had a high profile stake in this story at some point has never been had anything weird happen either. So it does make you think that he's probably dead. But then again, there is a part of me thinking, well, wouldn't he want us to think that? Because the moment we get any tip whatsoever, we're going to know, and there's going to be a full-blown investigation.
You ever tried goading him at all? Because we'd like to do that right now on your behalf if you're looking at this.
Oh, my God, Stuart.
Okay, micro penis, if you're listening, contact us. I dare you to. MidnightMovieCowboys@gmail.com.
Yeah, that was the thing. That was his thing. Is he had a tiny penis? He's a micro.
And the show has reached a new low.
Yes,
as low as his dick. Carry on.
Yeah, y'all were saying that.
Throwing out verbal insults to an uncaught serial killer.
Well, the theory I had read that they think that after Janelle, he didn't have the physical ability or athletic ability he had in the 70s to scale rooftops and such. And
well, Let's say he was 25 or 30 in 1976, right? That makes him 40.
Which is the belief they had, right? That he was between 25 and 30.
Didn't they say he was practically like a teenager in that age?
Some people go from 18 to 30, and some people have described him from white to Asian. It's like so bizarre.
It's like the police sketches I saw. I thought he looked like a ginger.
But the what I had seen was because I think from his DNA test, they figured he was of like Norwegian descent or something. Like he was blonde.
And they said
blonde, blue eyed. The sketches you've seen are based on suspicious characters they've seen in the area. I think supposedly one victim saw his face in the mirror.
Yeah, that's what I saw in that documentary as well.
When he was removing his mask, he was revealed in the mirror.
And he would wear hoods and hoodies and stuff like that. But what I personally think that some people describe his hair as being different colors. So I don't know if this is fact or not, but that leads me to think that he was probably at times wearing wigs and then having different with the hoods or the masks holding them down, you know, because people described his hair as being all different lengths or colors. So I don't think he was dying,
Right. Now, Cameron, do they know for sure if he killed the couple in Sacramento, the Maggiore's? Like, I think that's still under debate, right?
It's still under debate. It's probably likely, and the reason why I say that is because right after those murders happened, they published a picture of maybe somebody that you know has something to do with it, and then the crimes completely stopped in that area. They never came back.
Yeah, so, like he was a scene. There was a character seen fleeing the scene, or two people seen. And the sketches were in the paper, and they think one of them looks like some of the other sketches that we've seen. Like it could be the same guy with different hair.
And I've had police investigators say yes, it was him. I've had other ones say no, it was not. It was a couple guys that were dealing drugs and that type of thing. But what's really strange about that crime was, you know, here's a couple who's walking down the street with their dog, and allegedly, from what the story is that they probably saw, if it was him peeping in somebody's window. Brian Maggiore said something like, "Hey, what are you doing there?" Because he was military police, and the guy turned, they started walking away, and he started following them. Then they let go of the dog and took off running in two separate directions. Mm-hmm. And he ran after the guy, chased Brian into the backyard of the guy and shot him by the pool, I believe. And then while the wife was hiding in some bushes down the street, he somehow found her and killed her and shot her. Hmm. And then so it's like this weird, like, that's why some people think that that he was military from Vietnam or something like that, because, you know, this acute sense of smell, you know, like how the hell did he track her? So it's very bizarre. So either it was not associated or it was, but even if it wasn't, somehow the sketch came out that scared him because he didn't come back.
Yeah. Right.
Hello, friends. Do you not have enough geek in your life? Are you made fun of because you know the exact name and alphanumerical designation of every single droid in Star Wars? Do you know how to perform a wedding ceremony entirely in Klingon? Have you created a timeline about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and then tried to convince everyone that yours is the definitive one? Do you have a TARDIS as your everyday means of travel? Do you find yourself relating to many of the characters in Kevin Smith's films? If the answer to these questions is yes, then we have a podcast for you. The United States of Geekdom. Now in its fourth year of talking about what makes us geeks go tick, we bring you the finest in geekiness and a place for you to find like-minded people in this awesome community. Find us at www.unitedstatesofgeekdom.com. And now we are proud to announce that we are now members of the community at projectnerd.com. Get your geek on.
Do you think that the fact that he hasn't been caught is a case of him having a lot of luck or mishandling of the case by the police, or a bit of both?
I think it is both, because obviously if they had known back then, I mean, I know there's a couple guys that had inklings that it was the same guy, but they didn't know for sure. So, and I think if if they had been able to lock it in as the same guy right from the start, there would have been more, you know, just a full-on intensive manhunt for this guy. Whereas, you know, if you have so many serial killers in the 80s, you know, all killing, even in the Irvine, Santa Ana area, there was like six or seven at one time. So it's hard to – if you think every single case is a different case, I mean, it's really sad because one of the couples that was murdered for years – I mean, years, right? Until the late 90s, they were killed in 1980. And until whatever, 97, 98, the parents of the man that were killed were convinced it was the jealous ex-boyfriend of the wife that came and killed them. Mm. So, yeah. And obviously that didn't prove to be the case, but it made the family strained. It made them question each other and look and do background checks on each other when they had nothing at all to do with who this guy was, you know?
You know, I just find this a fascinating case. Just the fact that this guy's never been caught, I can't believe. You know, I put it down actually to a lot of more inept policing, and I'm sorry to say that. I'm sure they're pardon the pun, their hands are tied with certain things that they can and can't do, especially with the lot of the jealousy amongst all the other department, all the other police stations. You know, what do you call them, counties?
Yeah.
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 Because that smacks of the Zodiac on as well, where they had files and possibilities that it could have been this guy, but, Vallejo wouldn't give up the ones to Sacramento and just, you know, all those sorts of things. And I can't fathom the fact that they just won't cooperate with each other to get this case solved.
You know, another thing, Stu, is you have to remember is back then the idea of a serial killer on a rampage like that, it was pretty new. So this was kind of like police learning how to deal with something like this.
Yeah, but they had a 10-year span, John.
I know, but it's like, but in the 70s, you didn't, it's hard to find cases like that in the 50s and 60s that are on this level. This guy's aggressive. A lot of people think he's ex-military. I don't necessarily buy into that, but they thought he had the type of training. Like, he just seemed like, you know, his luck with eluding and the way, like, if he's the killer of the Maggiore couple, then, you know, how he found her in the bushes and stuff. A lot of people kind of link that with military. I don't really buy into it because there were times where I think one of the victims fought him off and he left or something. Like, but she said he wasn't that strong. Like,
right. Right. Yeah, and there's another thing where I talked to a journalist, and she said that she thinks that he probably grew up in a military household, but probably wasn't military because his personality would not allow somebody to talk down to him in boot camp.
Yeah, exactly. And there was also theories he was a dropout from boot camp or had been in service and was kicked out. But I think he grew up like with a military dad or something, and you know, may have been a track athlete in high school because he was good at scaling fences, like really good. Like.
Have you guys, any of you guys ever seen the things you bring up there? Any of you guys ever seen the Judd Nelson film Relentless?
Yeah.
No.
Does that remind you at all?
Oh, not in a long time.
Yeah, but
a little bit.
Yeah, because the failed police officer who couldn't get into the academy ends up becoming a killer, can scale fences. Yeah. You know, it just reminded me of that film Relentless by
Lustig.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, it's just like that whole phenomenon that they weren't even called serial killers in the 70s, I don't think. I don't even remember that phrase being used until the 80s, like after Red Dragon came out in paperback. But, you know, it was kind of a new phenomenon in terms of that. I mean, this was super aggressive. When I read about this case, it was hard to believe it was not well known because this guy was just aggressive. Like, if he had been murdering people in Sacramento, some people have said that if he murdered them at the rate he was raping people, there would have had National Guard in the street. Like, that's how bad he was.
Wow, really?
Okay. Yeah, wow. I mean, you know, it's because that's how prolific, aggressive, and everything. But then again, like I've also read, he had chances for confrontations with people, and he fled if sometimes when that happened. So I don't buy that he was military. You know, I don't think he was a tough guy at all.
Okay. Cameron, is there any sort of website out there which is definitive about the amount or the information out there, whatever information there is about this guy? Because I know, I come back to Zodiac, there's a Zodiac .com, I think it is, and it's chock full of information. It's like you can spend hours on there. Is there anything with this?
No, I mean there is like a main website. I don't, off the top of my head, I think it's, if you just look up original Night Stalker, it should come up. I think it's like EAR-ONS or something like that.
Yeah.
And that just kind of gives you kind of a brief overview of, you know, of the case. They don't put a lot of information on there just because, you know, they want people to come forward and so they can weed out, you know, the crazies from the people. And then there's a couple message boards. There was one on the A&E board, but that one, that got taken over by trolls, as the internet often does. And so there is a guy on there that spends every waking hour trying to connect the ear to the Zodiac to say they're the one person.
Yeah.
And then
there's the Unabomber.
and the Unabomber. Jesus. Yeah. And then there's another message board that just got made up, I think, in the last year or so. I think that's the one that, John, that you were on.
I've been reading that one.
Wait, John was on that message board? Hang on. Oh, John, hang on. How old are you, John? Huh? You're not mid-50s, are you? You're all right then.
No.
Oh, that's good. Thank you for that.
Younger than you.
And I know the people who run that board, and they're good people. You got to deal probably with some crazies that come on there too. I think they're doing pretty good at trying to weed some of those people out. But
yeah.
It's really hard,
Cameron. I've noticed that some of what I think are good people, they have their people of interest who I think it may have been cleared in the 70s, and they think they need to take another look at. That seems to be the big dispute on there. Right. They don't name names, but they talk about there's this military guy who was older, but he looked young and he had political connections and he was cleared by DNA 4 times, I think. That's the story I heard. And, you know, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's hard though on those kind of message boards, because even if you come out with, your thoughts about something, you're pretty much shot down to post down, you know what I mean? It's like,
And so
it's really hard. So it's funny, cause like, when I was investigating, this case because of doing my research for the film, there were some things that came up, and I knew for a fact that if I contacted somebody on the message board, it would then get sent to somebody who knew somebody, and then you would become like the laughingstock of the message board, that type of thing. So I ended up taking my information right to the FBI in Sacramento, and I said, "Here, you want this? You take it." And then they took that information and they gave it to Sacramento law enforcement and to the retired detectives, who then contacted the people from the message board to let them know I had done this, and then they decided to try to destroy my credibility on the message board anyway.
Oh, gosh.
Wow. Message board trolls. I don't believe that.
No, but what I'm saying, though, is that you can see that there are leaks everywhere. With just drive, not even announcing anything. I drove to the FBI. I gave them a file. Next thing I know, on the message boards, they're discussing me.
Did they start a Facebook page which said Cameron Cloutier knows nothing about earphones?
No. And it's funny, though, because there's a lot of people, not I'm talking about the old message board, the A&E message board, not the new one. But the old one, I mean, there would be people out there that would, like, you know, post my name, post my wife's name. And it's like, come on, you know, we're dealing with, you know, and there's like, you know, you would see that post would get, you know, 6,000, 7,000 views, but, you know, there's only, you know, 200 registered members. You know what I mean? It's like, so, so it makes you a little nervous as to who is reading these things. I haven't been
yeah.
contacted by anything. So, you know, but, you know, it is a very scary case. I mean, not so much. I mean, like, listen, I mean, the guy is not scaling fences today and riding bikes and running over rooftops, but he's probably could sit in a car and shoot somebody. You know? So,
yeah, that's right.
He's probably just beating off in front of a computer right now.
He might be doing that to this episode when it drops next week.
Oh, yeah.
I hope so. Let's bring him out.
Well, what's interesting.
John Grace encourages masturbation.
What's really interesting, and I'm curious to hear what happens, is that, like I said, I've been doing this for, you know, 4 years or so, but there was like these little, listen, I mean, because most not so much because of the style of the film, but because of the subject matter. You know, there's a lot of, like, at least at one point, there were a lot of, like, horror independent websites where, like, that they wanted to talk about this. So
yeah,
I was like, sure, let's talk about it, because it would just kind of give the film a little bit more exposure. Police then start getting frustrated because they thought that I was trying to make just some random Friday the 13th film. And I was like, no, it's just that those are the websites that want to talk about this.
Yeah. So,
but the thing, what's interesting, is that they'd be these little websites that, you know, would generate very little traffic, and then they would do like an interview with me on not necessarily an audio one, but more just like a print one over. Huh. And then they would contact me like 2 weeks later. They're like, holy shit, my views have gone up like 200%, you know, because people who go on Google and look this up, I mean, everybody wants to know what's going on with the case. You know, I get messages all the time from people who, you know, want to, you know, they encourage the film, they want the film to happen, but, you know, it's like, hey, if every single one of you people put in $1, I'd be able to make the damn film.
Okay, that's a good segue. Where is the state of your film at the moment, and what is
the state of it?
Yeah.
Well, to be perfectly honest, the only person who is working on this film is me.
Okay.
I mean, I do. Harry Manfredini, who did the scores for like Friday the 13th and all stuff, he's like, you know, he was like really interested, and I think he still is, about doing the score at least for the flashback scenes. And I thought of the crimes, and I thought, well, those would be at least scary, because that music, Friday the 13th, I still can't watch. Those movies are silly, but the music, I could never like be alone at my home and listen to that.
Yeah,
music. Yeah.
And I don't mean just. Genius. I don't mean just the ch-ch-ch-ha-ha. I'm talking about all that other music. That,
yeah, the string orchestrations, yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and it's weird because, again, the film has gotten so much support, but it's translated into nothing. And I've talked with a few filmmakers, and I threw out this theory, and they kind of agree with me, is that since the whole crowdfunding thing happens – if you're on Facebook and you're affiliated with Creative People, there is a different Kickstarter, Indiegogo project on your page every 5 seconds coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
So many great potential projects are just being lost by the wayside. And there are people out there who are, you know, I'm sure they're really nice people, but you can't even believe, like, oh, this project they're making, I don't know, about something that I can't even imagine anybody would want to see raises $300,000.
Oh, no, you know, I can bring one up, Cameron. Kung Fury, that piece of shit that I saw up on – it looks like the dumbest crap ever.
It appeals to the hipster the hipster genre movie crowd. You know?
Yeah, it really looks stupid.
You have to pander to them and you know, they're the ones who are willing to toss money into this stuff. So that's why
the
you
ones
see
who
like
are these eagerly anticipating Sharknado 2. You know,
but I had a crowdfunding thing that told you know all about the case, the film, me. I had home videos of Janelle. I had her mom asking for anyone to help, and you know the. Film got, you know, a few $100, you know, after like 60 days, you know,
it's like, Jesus,
like, you know what I mean? And it was like shared on so many sites and tweeted out by people. And I'm just thinking, I'm under the impression that nobody reads anymore.
They don't. They really don't.
They don't read.
No.
That's not an impression. That's a fact, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You people should be ashamed of yourself. Okay, Cameron, are you going to kickstart this thing again on some other thing? Indiegogo, Kickstarter, you plan on trying again?
You know, I would love to. Here's the thing, though. It does kind of really break your heart to just see something that is – it's not just me. I mean, even if it was like someone I didn't know. I mean, just this project, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just amazing because it's not so much – okay, it is really sad, obviously, when it doesn't meet its goal. But it's really sad when you see the films around it meet their goals and you can't even believe that anyone's donating to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right.
And if it's heartbreaking for me, it's really heartbreaking for the families of the victims to watch, you know, this possibility just get squashed again and again and again. So it's – you know, I've kind of – I mean, honestly, until John contacted one of the Facebook pages the other day, you know, I had actually – because the last person that came on that was a producer that is no longer affiliated with the project, you know, he threatened to kill me and my wife. And I ended up having to press charges against
him.
It wasn't him. And he, you know, and it's just – that's what I'm saying. Like, so right now it's like it's just me on the project. And – you know, even the worst films, little low budget films, I get so envious because they have like this like adoring little team that work together. And I'm just like, okay, it's me against the world here with this film. And, you know, it's just it's very sad because that's not the way of any film. You would think that this film would have like a team of pro feminist people behind it or something, you know. But I think what it is you hear not serial killer, you hear serial uncaught serial rapist, people get very, you know, it's touchy. And even though the film doesn't dwell in any of that whatsoever, that is a fact of the cases. I mean, you can't ignore that. 50 people were raped by this guy and have never found any closure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I personally think you should put another Kickstarter up. I mean, it's easier said than done for me to say that, but I just got the attitude. Just always keep trying. Cause you never know.
Yeah, but the problem is that real quick. The problem is with that is that they don't take down the campaigns. You know what I mean? Just in case somebody donates some money, whatever like that. So what happens is if you keep trying, and then you have like 10 different Indiegogo projects up that have the same thing, it just looks like, you know, like there's something wrong with you.
Well, there's a I do have question. Have you thought about like the angle? Like with the way it's being approached, maybe? Because I don't know. I heard a seminar recently with the guy from Fund Anything. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how they get involved with the projects that are on that page in terms of campaigning to make it as successful as possible. Like they kind of get involved with the people on there and say like, okay, here's what you can do with this project to make it more appealing or more – something, you know, like what was it? I was looking at there were some bands, like, you know, some bands do Kickstarter, like kind of projects for their new albums. Mm-hmm. And there were just like, it was funny because I saw this article. It was looking at successful ones and just it was like the way each article was worded for successful ones. It kind of made people feel like a part of the team. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
So, like, and I think, and I kind of wondered, like, I'm not saying you're doing a shitty job or anything. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, have you maybe thought about, like, the approach, like, maybe trying it a different way, like, and revamping the campaign or something?
Well, I
like,
did.
Maybe talking with someone.
I would love to talk to somebody. If somebody out there is listening and they want to contact me, please. I mean, I've looked over it. I've had other people look over it. They seem to, you know, it seems to make sense to them. What's really weird about it, though, is that, you know, I've had newspapers talk about the story and the film. The thing that just crushed me, I mean, absolutely crushed me, was that when this story came out again a year ago with in terms of the East Area Rapist, original Night Stalker, now being referred to as the Golden State Killer for a while, ABC News did a huge story about it, and they showed home video footage of Janelle, and they said, you know, Bird with a Broken Wing film coming soon. I thought, hey, that's going to really help. And nobody it generated no traffic to the page, which is really weird because you would think that national news, somebody would go, nope, nobody, zero.
Yeah, but the thing is, but when they hear coming soon, they think, okay, it's made, it's on its way.
Right. Yeah, that it gives a fake impression.
Yeah,
that that's true. That people just go, oh well, you know, they don't say.
Because when I first heard about it, maybe it was on one of those documentaries, and I think I was thinking, oh, so it's been made, and I Google it and saw that it was a project you were trying to get together, and I was like,
but
oh,
you would
God.
Think somebody, you would think somebody would have like come to the Facebook page and said, hey, when's it coming out? You know what I mean, or something,
right?
But nobody did. It generated nobody. So.
Do you have other forms of social media you're using, or just Facebook? Because I think,
I've done the Twitter, and I've had other people share it on their stuff, and I've done articles on blogs, and I mean, it's if you Google my name with Janelle Lisa Cruz or Burr with a Broken Wing, it's like four or five pages straight of articles from different websites and that type of thing, and it's brought nothing. I mean, it's so upsetting. to like the families to, I mean, tell you the truth, because they're just like, we don't understand. And it makes them feel like, again, that nobody cares, when it's like, that's not true. It's just that people are stupid. You know?
Yeah. Maybe you need to put the word paranormal in your film title. Like, get the idiot teen crowd in, but at least you get the bucks in, I suppose.
You want me to shoot this as a found footage movie?
Yeah.
Why? Not every other sucker's doing it, I guess. It's, unfortunately, I am not fond of found footage. I hate them.
Or have them call John Carpenter, JC.
That shot in Paranormal Activity of the couple in the bed, you could just like do a real time murder scene with that shot.
You really could, but I wouldn't know. I've never watched one of them in my life. I don't intend to.
No, but you understand what I'm saying.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. Well, like I said, if you want to put a Kickstarter up, we'd be more than happy to put it up there on our website.
I am definitely reconsidering it. I mean, John kind of talked to me the other day about stuff, and I was just like, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. So
you've just learned the power of John Grace. He's one smooth talker, that guy.
I call him Ginger Justice.
But regardless of, I mean, obviously I would love to get the film made, but I'd find it so amazing that even when I put out calls to, like, you know, like I see people who are, I don't know, independent filmmakers, whatever that, and they put out like a call like, hey, I need like 10 people to hold this and hold that, and you got like 20 people, I want to do it, and I'm like, hey, I'm looking for somebody to help out with this. Nobody. He's like a crickets. and I think what it is that it's unsolved, so people are so scared to have their name affiliated.
It didn't hurt Zodiac when that came out.
Well,
yeah,
but Zodiac had a book to go with it, though. Like, Zodiac was technically based on a book by Graysmith. So, also, I mean, it was kind of like had that sort of brand to go with it.
And also, when you have Fincher and Robert Downey Jr. on your project, people will come. You know what I mean?
Damn right they bloody will. Yeah.
You know, if it's go be in this, you know, low budget film from this guy in, you know, middle California, you know, it's like, well, who is this guy? And
how many shitty low budget Zodiac movies were there? Like really crappy, like Uli Lommel ones, you know?
Well, if you count the softcore movies from the early 70s, it was something like 4.
Although we all know what the greatest Zodiac movie is, Dirty Harry. Can I get an amen?
That's my favorite.
There was actually a Zodiac film that was made in 1970, I believe.
71. Yeah, that's the one I'm referring to. It's really more like a softcore movie.
Yeah, and was released by Something Weird on part of a three movie set.
Of course it was.
Yeah, and what they actually did, what was amazing, was they actually put a questionnaire box out the front of the theater, because it only ran about a week or two in California. And they put a questionnaire box outside the actual theater that it ran with a card saying something about the Zodiac, and they actually had a policeman hiding in the actual suggestion box trying to get cards, and if something looked suspicious, he would read them in there with a flashlight. If someone looks suspicious, they actually have cops out the front trying to catch Zodiac.
Wow.
Yeah.
Real quick, off topic, you mentioned Dirty Harry, and they, you know, they call him Scorpio in that one. But I just saw this great documentary about John Milius that's touring the film festivals right now, and he wrote most of the lines in Dirty Harry. And that's a really great documentary, so definitely seek it out if you like John Milius.
Oh,
stuff,
very much.
Oh, yeah. Love John Milius.
Because it really angered me in many ways, because this is a guy that got run out of Hollywood for doing Red Dawn, and, you know, and then of course, you know, in 2012 or whatever like that, this like lame remake of Red Dawn comes out and nothing happens to those people. You know, it's like, oh, it's just a brand name now. Meanwhile, this guy
they wanted to have the Tommy Chinese, but they didn't want to get rid of that Chinese box office potential, so they made them North Koreans. Like, the starved North Korean people are going to invade us. Yeah.
but here's a movie that destroyed this great filmmaker writer's career, you know, kind of like Michael Powell, right, with Peeping Tom, and you know, and it's like, okay, we're just gonna remake Peeping Tom now, okay, go ahead, I guess. But it just, you know, Milius is somebody who deserved better, and it really, you know, really, the documentary just drives me nuts, because, like, I mean, in a good way, but, you know, he's working on a King Conan in a Genghis Khan film, and then he drops from a stroke, and he's been recovering ever since.
Oh, jeez.
Technically, he did make a Genghis Khan movie. It was called Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, Conan's definitely more Genghis Khan than
anyway. So,
I will say though, my favorite John Milius movie is it's been a little while since I've seen it, but it's the one that I had the strongest positive reaction to is Rough Riders.
Oh yeah.
Never heard of it.
I would really like that film,
which I never saw. It's a TV miniseries, or
yeah, it's a TV movie, but it's. I just remember watching it and going like, "This is fucking great!" Like,
well,
I think that's the best thing it's done.
You know, you're in for a good documentary when Sam Elliott shows up in the first second of the documentary and says, "John Milius doesn't write for women or pussies, so get out if you don't want to learn about it."
I gotta speak to that.
Mustache or no mustache, Sam Elliott is the fucking man, seriously.
So do they bring up that Walter from Big Lebowski was based on him?
Only during the end credits. I was kind of surprised. And also, here's something else. I didn't know that John Milius created the UFC.
What?
Yeah, the Octagon. He created the Octagon cage.
Oh, okay.
That's incredible, seriously.
That just makes sense.
He was a very early Gracie. So he's a good friend of Chuck Norris. He did a rewrite on Lone Wolf McQuade he's not credited for. And Chuck Norris was the guy who really brought the Gracies to America. Or
he did a lot of ghost screenwriting work. Like, you know, he rewrote Jaws, you know, the
Hunt for Red October.
He's not credited for Dirty Harry, even though he wrote a lot of famous
stuff. Yeah, weirdly, Terrence Malick ghost wrote some of Dirty Harry, too.
Oh, really? No. Terrence Malick's script was rejected. He had it where what became Magnum Force.
Milius had a hand in Magnum Force.
Yeah, Scorpio was going out and killing people who got away from the law or rich people. It was like a Terrence Malick, you know, kind of weird concept, and they kind of Milius reformatted that in the Magnum Force with Chimino.
I see. I just heard that Terrence Malick had some involvement in Dirty Harry that he wasn't credited for.
No, he couldn't have, because Dirty Harry is actually exciting and enjoyable.
Fuck you.
But the saddest, the saddest thing about the Milius documentary, because like, you know, I'm here, I am watching this. I thought basically they made this little documentary to like, you know, highlight this guy that hasn't been talked about very much. And then about two thirds of the way through, you get like, okay, I didn't realize the documentary was going to go here. And that is he had a friend that stole most of his money. And so he went into pitch himself as a writer for Deadwood, and David Milch walked in, the creator of Deadwood walked in and saw that he was there, and he said, no, I'm not having the writer of Apocalypse Now gonna just, you know, be one of the, you know, grind writers of Deadwood. So he said, what do you need? And Milius just said, I just want to be writing on Deadwood. And he said, no. He goes, what's going on? He said, Milius goes, my son's going to law school. I can't afford it. I have no money. Milch wrote him a check for 4 years. So Milius could live and put his kids through a law school, which then Milius paid back when he created Rome.
Yeah, I was about to say, because he did a lot on Rome. Like,
yeah, but it was just kind of
restructured.
Like,
a lot of the King Conan stuff made it into Rome.
Yeah, I had heard that. I didn't know that if that was true or not.
You know, Deadwood was my favorite series of the 2000s. It just shot up even more as the most awesome show of the 2000s.
I've never seen it. I need to pick that one up.
Oh, man. You know, you are robbing yourself.
Well, I just have something to look forward to. You know,
listen, they made the Firefly movie. They made the Veronica Mars movie. We need the Deadwood closure.
Oh, please. But it'll never happen. Apparently,
no. They knocked the sets down.
Yeah, it's all gone. Yeah. It's all destroyed. I just wish. I don't just dream about that.
Hi, I'm Matt Dawson. I like to eat coon, cream of shrimp soup, cream of mushroom soup. I like to eat Fig Newtons in my kiddie pool while drinking the last can of Billy beer in existence.
Hey, I'm Bill.
Matt, do Bill.
Venezuela, motherfuckers! I wish I were dead.
No, let's see you start a story here. Like, wait. I really want to tell you about the story.
Really,
it's going to take 10 minutes. Blah, 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 blah. I really don't want to talk about the story. And you can find those two gringos and Super Mexican on the next Super Podcast. Thank you very much. Okay, bye.
All right, anyway, we're straying way too far. Okay, let's get back to your film, Cameron.
Okay.
What happens, just say, if it just never gets off the ground, would you take the section option of doing that documentary?
I honestly don't know how you could, because like I said, there very few people, the cops can only say so much. Most of the people are either dead or the people who were attacked, obviously they don't want to be on camera. you know, so there's very few people who will talk on camera. There's very little footage that's available. So it would basically be me walking through the neighborhoods going, and then over here this happened.
You need to do it. Your script or not at all, I say.
Yeah. I'm just saying, just to highlight something about this case, that's all.
I've been trying to do that by doing – I've made little YouTube videos with like interviews with Janelle's family and little trailers using like her home video footage and stuff like that and songs that she liked. You know, just trying to bring out something, and those have gotten like several thousand views. But again, it translates into very little. I mean, people will take everything for free, but when it comes time to you know, and I make it very simple. It's like $1, you know, $1, you know, and people don't really care. So,
right. The other thing is what they've been leaking out in recent years, like the blue paint chip evidence or something that he may have been a painter. You know, right. It's like that. It doesn't really engage or excite anybody because it just seems so marginal.
But it also is like, well, why didn't you release this in 2000? Like, what's the point?
Why wasn't this out like 20 years ago or something, or 30 years ago when it mattered and people would have remembered? And I almost thought maybe they know more than they're revealing, and maybe they've got a couple of people in their scope that they're looking at, but they just put stuff out to say, this blue chip, because they did that with Dennis Rader, BTK. They said, does anybody remember a car being driven on this day? And it was just like a stalking horse because they actually had the guy in their sights. You know, so maybe that's what it is. But I wouldn't want to discourage anybody from thinking about this. And, you know, anybody listening tonight, if you got that weird uncle who's in his 50s and 60s who lived out in California in the 70s and you think is really bizarre and you know he's got quite a few quirks, you know, think twice about it.
He wakes you up every morning with a flashlight.
Right. And he's got what was the blue bull tattoo on his arm? Like, supposedly that's one description that somebody saw.
It's possible, but... Nobody knows for sure.
John, doesn't everybody have a weird uncle? Don't we all have him?
I know, that's a thing, you know. But yeah. Specifically weird uncle. With a micro penis, you know.
Weird uncle, he's cool, he got you high for the first time, but then that one day.
Well, what makes it hard, too, for the amateur armchair sleuths of today is that, you know, they're pulling up all these Google satellite images of this neighborhood and this, not knowing that, come on, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, those neighborhoods looked completely different.
That's
what I've noticed about that message, you know, like the message board, is that everybody is thinking with a 21st century perspective and not in a 70s perspective of things, of how society was, because it was different. You know, California was a bit different back then.
Yeah.
Have you guys, or especially Cameron, you ever thought that this case is so obscure that it's going to be too hard to raise the funding? Because up until Zodiac's release in 2006, to me, I'd never heard of it.
Really?
No. Why the fuck would I hear it? I live in Australia.
Well, that's right. You live in, like...
Yeah, he hears about Wolf Creek.
Yeah, I was about to make a Wolf Creek joke. God damn it, you beat me to it.
I'm a bigger redneck than Mick Taylor ever fucking be.
John Jarrett, I will say.
Hey, I heard, and Stuart will be able to confirm. I heard from someone in Australia that John Jarrett used to be on a children's show.
Yes, he did. Absolutely. Okay. He was on a show called Play School, which had been running about 40 years. And that was, it's had hundreds and hundreds. Play School was actually a thing where in the off season for people who were doing television series, we'd just jump onto the ABC, which is the government-run channel here, and just go and do Play School. Yes, John Jarrett was on that, on kids shows, and he's done all sorts of stuff. He's been around for years and years. I think he was married to, or still married to, a woman called Nonnie Hazelhurst.
And now he's the head on the stick guy.
Yeah, and that's actually based on the true story, too. That is. Yeah, very much so.
And they just made a sequel.
Yeah, which I've heard is an absolute shocker, so I'm not going to bother with it. I thought the first one was all right, you know. It was a bit stereotypical. It's fodder for people like Hunter and John to go, yeah, see, that's what Australians are really like Mick Taylor. It's like, you know. I scare Mick Taylor. He's a fucking...
Well, over here in the States, Wolf Creek got a big endorsement from Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino. They were all over the posters.
Well, and John Jarrett was in fucking Django Unchained. You know?
Yeah, for authenticity. That was all.
Yeah. Well, I told Stu he has to see that movie just to hear Quentin's fake Australian accent.
No, I actually value my television. I don't want to put my fist through it.
Oh, I just want to see the, like, I want to talk to Stu immediately after just to hear him in Australian football hooligan mode.
I'm sure that clip is on YouTube. Just send him the link.
Yeah, I was going to say, good point. I was going to say, if someone's got the link to that clip, I will watch it. I'm not sitting through 2.5 hours to watch that. Forget it.
And it's at the very end of the movie, too. So
it really is, yeah.
I don't want to see that. I don't want to see Jamie Foxx's dick. I'm just not interested in that movie whatsoever. Anyway,
And actually, the title of Wolf Creek shows up for a second in Death Proof.
It does on the double feature board, yeah.
Yeah.
Wolf Creek 2's out now, isn't it? Didn't it just come out or something?
We just said that, you fucking deafhead, about 5 times.
Oh. What?
We just said it about 5 times and it's just come out. I just said I'm not going to watch it. No, it just got released over here about 2 weeks back.
Well, what's interesting is, one thing that my film doesn't – it has very, very little similarities to the overall show. But people have thought of Janelle, the main character of the film, the last victim of the Easter egg rapist. They have equated her you say Mary Kelly. Mm. I've had other people say Laura Palmer because she's very – if you know Twin Peaks.
I don't know if you guys know that or not.
Okay. Okay, I didn't know it. It's an old show, so I don't know if people still know about it or not. But a lot of people equate her to being like that because she did have two different sides, and people thought that she was one way when she was another way, and she did have dealings with nefarious people that may have had associations with this guy.
What, like midgets in the red room?
No, not that far.
Not that far.
They only spoke in palindromes.
What was that pie that Kyle MacLachlan used to eat? Was it
the cherry pie?
Cherry pie, that was it.
Cherry pie, and coffee.
Darn good coffee.
Yeah.
I was gonna say Audrey Horne, but that's another story.
So you can have Hannah as the log lady.
I'd make a really good log lady, thank you very much.
There's your next animation for the Facebook page for your cover photo.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Have you anything else you want to bring up, Cameron, before we wind it up?
Well, if anyone's listening, they want to join the Facebook page, that'd be great, because there's a lot of good articles on there and pictures of Janelle and a lot of stuff about the victims and there's a couple of crime scene photos, but a lot of it's like the neighborhoods and how they looked at the time, Janelle's house, her neighborhood. But, you know, from you guys talking, I would be interested in doing another crowdsourcing thing. I just want to make sure that I got to figure out before I do it, though, the maximum way, you know, of getting maximum attention, because tweets are working, Facebook's not working. Facebook has reduced it where it's like 2% of your people like your page or even seeing your post.
Well, yeah, now you have to pay up if you want people to see your shit,
Makes you think Facebook's actually sabotaging it altogether.
Facebook now is like, it's like they're the internet and they want to, you know, you got to pay.
Are we just going to jump ship and go back to MySpace, or what are we doing?
Yeah, I know.
MySpace is for suicidal goths, isn't it?
No, it's
these days, yeah.
Well, I'm not going to make that joke. I'm going to stay away.
But anyway, this is an important case. I think the film would definitely help highlight the story. If, you know, even if the film wasn't made, which in my mind would be a tragedy, because I would like to honor all the victims, including Janelle, because the movie's not really about him. I mean, there's lots of movies about BTK and Dahmer and Gacy and Bundy, but this movie is not about him, even though there are.
They're all directed by Uli Lommel. Holy shit.
Yeah. You know, this is a film that's entirely about the victims, and with him as an afterthought, which the police thought, you know, Well, that would probably piss him off even more and make him come out because he wants to be the star of the show, considering that one of his poems said that he was anxious to, you know, see who would play him in the movies.
Don't you think highlighting him more in the film would actually bring him out? Because if he gets wind of the fact that he's hardly in it, he's not even going to bother watching it.
No, he's in it. I'm just saying the film isn't about him because we don't know anything about him. I don't want to start speculating about who he was and then have me so wrong that it detracts from the investigation.
I suppose if you're talking in the realms of horror films as well, Halloween was like that. It wasn't about Michael Myers at all. It was a small amount, but it was more about the girls. Yeah. It was more about the three female leads in the film.
But you always had that freight train just heading right for them.
That's
kind of what this is.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
The shape.
Yeah. That's it for this episode. I want to thank Cameron for coming on and for John teeing this up.
Yep.
You're such a humble man, John. You don't take praise very well, do you?
And we should say that if there's any major updates, Cameron, let us know and we'll share them on our page.
Yeah.
Like with this film, If there's any opportunities for people to help out, share them with us, and we'll share them with the listeners.
Yeah, by all means, just feel free to always hit us up.
I know I mean, I know, like you, the well's been dry for a while, but we'll do our part to help get this made.
But I mean, there's a shift in tone. If your last fundraiser was what, 2010, was it?
No, it was probably a year ago.
Oh, okay, a year ago. I was gonna say because. As you know, genre has come and go in Hollywood, and thanks to crap like Paranormal Activity.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, for the last 5 years, I mean, horror has been pretty big. I mean, that was another thing. I was quite shocked that I thought, if anything, a bunch of rabid horror fans would be like, "I want to see this movie," but they want to see it, but they want to stream it for free. You know? So.
Can I ask you? And you don't have to answer which studios, but which have you shopped at the many of the major and independents out there?
No, because. You know for a fact they'd want this to be PG-13. There's no way you can do 50 rapes and murders and keep it to that.
Yeah, but you don't have to actually show.
I mean, just people get really nervous. And
well, and it sounds like you have a very specific vision for this, Cameron. And if you go to someone else, it's going to be their movie now. It's not going to be your movie.
But what makes you think there isn't?
They're going to turn it into something else. They're going to fuck it up.
Not necessarily. What makes you think there isn't a studio head out there or someone affiliated with that?
What fantasy land are you living in?
No. Seriously, who might actually have some sort of?
That is like such a snowball's chance in hell.
but there's a chance.
It sounds to me like this guy has a vision, you know.
No, I'm not saying he doesn't have a vision.
The way I always picture. The film would be made independently, but then released, you know, you could release it through somebody else, you know, because then they have very little say as to what was made.
They can cut stuff out, but, you know, or do something with it. But, you know, like the film's there, you know, that you have your version. But, you know, if you take it to a studio, they're going to be like, well, what if we knew more about the killer? What if, you know... We made it about something. What if, you know,
that's most likely going to happen, but there's no harm in just trying. That's what I say.
Just going to take, like, but here's what happened. You know, here's what will happen, though. Somebody will be like, oh, we love it. You sign on a paper, you sign it over, then that's when they start fucking with you.
Yeah, that's right. And it sits on a shelf and goes into turnaround for years. I mean, yeah, I know. You know, I've heard all about this sort of stuff, but there's no harm in trying.
Well, what happens is they'll turn Janelle into a superhero.
She'll be Ripley from Aliens.
That's if you get Rennie Harlan on board, I suppose.
Well, Rennie's too busy making terrible Hercules movies.
Well, he made a Hercules movie so bad that Brett Ratner's rebooting it this September.
Oh, God. So we get one shit kicker to another. Wow, that's great to hear.
I saw the trailer for his Hercules movie, and it does not look good.
Who's Hercules? Chris Tucker?
No, fucking, yeah, Chris Tucker.
The Rock.
Jackie Chan, actually.
Hercules. All right. Let's get your plugs out the way, Cameron, if we haven't already.
Well, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I also have a rather ridiculous media Facebook page called Obnoxious and Anonymous, taken after the comments boards on Yahoo and Ain't It Cool News.
We love Ain't It Cool News over here.
We talk about all the stories that most media sites will not cover. So you should come on and join the conversation. It's quite fun. But also, there is a Facebook page, like I said, for Bird with a Broken Wing. It's the story about Janelle Lisa Cruz and the East Area Rapist original Night Stalker.
Okay. You said that there's a fundraiser or fun starter page, where they call it, that's dormant but not completely dead with. Can you still get donations through that?
No, if I relaunched the crowdsourcing thing, then yes. But no, because it stops after whatever 30 days or whatever.
Oh, okay then. Maybe you should title your film Kung Fury 2, The Revenge of the Irons. You might get some, yeah. Because stupid people pay for that first Kung Fury movie. You Swedish fuck. I hate that guy. All right, well, that's it for us for this week around. We had 2 weeks of documentary filmmakers launching projects or attempting to launch projects out there. We encourage both of them to get looked at and throw them a few shekels as well, because we find them both to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But next week's one's going to be a lot of fun. I think we've got a boy, got a southern boy from Super Mexican coming on next week. One you haven't heard on the show before.
Yeah.
And, and the most laid back and probably the funniest of the lot. No offense to Bill or Soup, but, Matt Dawson is very, very funny individual. And we got him
He's really good at Twitter, too.
Oh, he's hysterical. And
all three of those guys are great at Twitter. Like, Super Mexican's won awards for his Twitter.
Yeah.
But, Saint RPH, Matt Dawson on Twitter is really good.
He is. And, if you've heard Super Mexican through us, or you knew of him before we ever mentioned him, and you've heard all them fake commercials, yeah, about 85% of that is all Matt Dawson's work.
Manified.
That's Matt. That is Matt. And that new one they just did, that Get Covered one, oh, man, I was on the floor. It's hysterical. So until next week, see you later.
Adios.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.
All right, take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.